Mayo in particular was very badly hit by the famine, and the population was literally halved. It's one of the things that actually turned me off writing specifically about the famine. I did research local paper reports of famine scenes, and they were so harrowing, I couldn't really know how I could pull a novel of any substance, and lightness. There has to be light for me in a novel. So my characters are basically three women, one from Belwonnet, one is I suppose Anglo-Irish, Georgina, and the other is Bridget. She's the matron of the young woman, and the young nurse trained in Dublin, matron of the hospital or the new workhouse, and how their lives interchange. And it's just on the cusp of the famine, when there's still hardship, there's still poverty, but people are still make do, and there's still there was a very vibrant cultural life. They had balls, they had parties. The local army barracks played on the lawn every Sunday and played a medley of Irish tunes, and people gathered and sat around. So there was a good style of life. There was hardship, but no more than other countries. And what did happen, I suppose, it was just that the punitive tax regimes forced people into overdependence on potato, because it was a miracle crop, you know. And it was also at the time of the famine failed in Britain and across Europe, but they didn't have the dependency that the Irish had been forced into, not because the Irish had a predilection for loving potatoes. They did keep other stock. They would have kept pigs, they would have kept dairy cows and other animals, but they were all sold for tax. So they were reduced to living only on the potato. And so when the famine hit, they had no other means of sustenance. And it was, if you like, you know, we have the phrase saying that Britain's difficulty is Ireland's opportunity. The reverse was true here. Ireland's difficulty was to some extent Britain's opportunity, and they saw the powers that be saw it as the hand of God, punishment.
That's right, yeah, punishment. Yeah. So they exported grain while people starved.
They turned a blind eye, and by neglect, I suppose it was, it was an ethnic cleansing. But there's a very fine line between an overt act of ethnic cleansing, where self accusation alone would make you stop, but then it wasn't an overt act. It happened by, as I say, a storm of events, so it was by stealth, you know. And so they were able to justify it by saying, oh, the reprobate Irish, the hand of God is in this, even though it had been a completely fabricated, man-made disaster.
Because they also put, landlords were also beginning with this rise of industrialisation,
yes,
bigger farms.
Whereas for years the
ordinary people were allowed to stay on little farm holdings that they could subsist themselves.
Yeah.
They were being put off the land as well.
So that was a perfect opportunity to mass evictions and throwing people onto the side of the roads. And I mean, we know the stories of just people towards the end of the famine. Even halfway through the famine, the workhouses weren't full because the stigma was so strong, and that there were such dreaded places. And for a man to surrender his family to the care, to be awarded the state of the Queen, effectively, was such a humiliation. But things then got so bad that people were dying outside the walls and along the roadside and buried. But again, that's not what I actually deal with in the book.
No, and I understand that, because you can't, as you say, it's unrelenting misery.
So the period in the book leads up to this point, and the last scene in the book, I don't want to give the plot away, is that one of the main characters walking down a hill towards the workhouse where she's built a little farm, and that was a very important feature, where she had built this farm for they wanted to alleviate the suffering. And the potatoes are in bloom, and she has this interior monologue where she's talking to herself. I've heard the stories that the suppliers have been coming in saying about failed crops down south, and she's running her hands over the top of the potatoes and feeling the flowers, and says, "Aaron's had this before, we'd be all right." And, you know, and she hears while she's doing that, she hears the sounds of the children in the yards and the cooks in the kitchen, and she kind of reassures herself, "We'll get over this." But little does she know the calamity that's about to befall them. So these are
do you think that, just, and I'm interested in this, that do you think in Ireland we've really let sink in what happened to us during the famine, or do you think that at this stage we still have repressed our famine memory? Because if that, our population was halved, I mean, one way or another, between death and emigration, you're talking about 4 million in terms of the overall, when the population eventually halved. That's only 100-something years ago.
I think it's from a lack of not factual but empirical knowledge, if you like. like the workhouse in Banna was knocked down in the 1930s, and it was never talked about because it was the shame, and the shame of poverty, the shame of we were reduced to a peasant class, if you like. And I have a theory about this. You know, it was an ethnic cleansing, and you see an ethnic cleansing. You can correlate it with even. And this might be controversial, with what the Nazis did to the Jewish and the minorities in World War II. If you really want to annihilate somebody, you have to reduce them to the level of an animal first. You don't annihilate an equal. So you can see it in a much more finite time period with what the Nazis did in World War II, where they stripped people of their property, they stripped them of their dignity, they stripped them of their identity. This is over 4 years. They stripped them of anything that gave them the status of a human being. So by the end, when they were exterminating them in camps, starved, dirty, lice-ridden, they looked on them as animals, because they'd reduced them. So it's much easier to justify extermination when somebody, you look on somebody as an animal. Now, they did that over 4 years, 5 years, with the Jews and minorities, with other minorities, including Catholics, in the concentration camps. The British did the very same thing in Ireland, but over a more protracted period, by stealth. So they removed their identities, they removed their land ownership, they removed their language, they removed their right to education, they removed their right to food, to culture. So the Irish peasant became synonymous through a British caricature, if you like, in their press and all the rest.
In which they were portrayed as animals.
Yes, portrayed as animals, as drunken, drunken louts.
Simeon.
And that was a very calculated, protracted denigration of a people and a culture who actually superseded the British culture by over 1,000 years, as we've learned here. The Gaelic culture was deep and very civilised. So when the famine came and our hordes of dispossessed and filthy immigrants went to America, they were exactly what they were, a British creation. This is not who we ever were, and that stayed with us, this idea of us ourselves as inferior, exporting our dispossessed. That wasn't our fault. That wasn't our creation. Our culture was decimated, as we see happening now in what China is doing in Tibet. You strip a people, you destroy their culture, and once you do that, you take away their identity, it's much easier to overrun them and think they're beneath you. So we have nothing to apologise for. We never had anything to apologise for, and who we were was not of our making.
And maybe finally we have something to remember, and constructively, as AFRI used to do, the famine walk, to be in solidarity with those who are hungry and suffering in the world.
Absolutely.
But we have to get our memory back to do that. Can I just say, your book is published by, tell me where people can get it.
Well, I have thehungerhouse.com. They can order it directly online. It's available in my own local bookstores. It's on Amazon. But one thing I want to say, I'm not doing intergenerational guilt. The forgiveness is very important. These all the people who suffered under this and people who perpetrated are all gone. I'm glad we are at a friendly point with our neighbours, but we can't hide history, and we have to face up to our own psychology. We need to understand how this happened. And my book, I hope, is addressing that, and that it's going before the famine, showing people as they were, cultured, civilised, still under pressure, but it was a wonderful, colourful, vibrant society pre-famine that really has been forgotten, and I try and tell it through these three characters in the book and how they interact with each other. And this is a bit of it's fiction, but it's rooted in reality.
Yeah, and a lot of research, clearly. Yeah. And I think that's a very good point about the intergenerational guilt. We are about trying to forgive. The only thing is, if we repress something and don't address it, you can't forgive. And I think that's probably what Queen Elizabeth did very well when she came here. There was I think, generally a sense of healing with people, because what was named was named. The 800 years were named, and people were able to say, we can let go.
Yeah, I agree with that. And part of our dealing with the famine, and I suppose is to acknowledge it wasn't our fault. And it was not because as a race there was some predilection towards being potato eaters.
Yeah. Nor
was it the will of God. But the other thing, I suppose, just one last thing, is good thing you can take out of it is our relationship with America is very close, and that comes directly from all the people who left and created this diaspora in America, and that wouldn't have happened, never in England, I suppose, but that wouldn't happen without the famine. So even the American cultural landscape and political landscape would be so different without the Irish famine. So it rolls on, the implications roll on and on.